to Cooper Talk.
Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper, and remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. I got to tell you something, people. About once a month, me and Joanne, we go to get pizza at a place called Crust and Fire. It's a little chain in South Jersey, and we go to the one in Medford, New Jersey. And whenever we go in, they have three TVs on, and they have these TVs, different shows, but they always have an episode of Baywatch. And we were sitting there watching it when we were eating, and you know, we forget how iconic that show was. I mean, it ran from 89 to 2001, and it was just so popular worldwide. And my guest was on it from 95 to 99, and now he's going to be in a I guess you'd call it a reboot, because it's not really a reboot, because he's playing the same character then, I mean, as then, all years later. And he has one of my favorite names to say, and my guest is David Chokichi. I said it right, Chokichi, right?
Oh my God, you got it right, man. You've been practicing, haven't you?
Oh yeah, man. I love that name. You know, it's funny. I want a good name like Chokichi, and I'm always sitting there going, I'm going to screw it up. Something's going to happen. So,
you nailed it. You nailed it.
So anyway, I want to hear about, no, it's not a reboot. It's just a continuation. Tell me about the new series, and then we'll go back to the old series. But tell me what's going on with the new series.
The smartest thing they've done is I got the offer. I've been pushing for this thing for years, man. And it was, I just fought tooth and nail, because I just saw myself in this thing. You know, I was kind of, I guess there's a couple other actors, but they're super smart. The showrunner, Matt Nair, all the producers, Mick G, the writers, Fremantle, they didn't go for the reboot. Let's change the formula of something that drew in, you know, we had 1.1 billion viewers a week, and there was only 5.5 billion on the planet at the time. So it's like, you don't want to mess with something that was like that good. So they actually, it's a continuation of almost, if you ended in 1999, kind of, because Hawaii doesn't really, 2 years in Hawaii didn't really work that well. I mean, it was just like a different show, you know, it was like Baywatch Hawaii. So they're taking it from 1999 to current present time. And they're even like the things that have happened where original characters like have died and now or whatever, like Alexander Paul died in the first, original show, like those things all happened, everything that in the show, the original show happened and kind of exists in our kind of our backstory going forward. The one thing they are removing is some of the elements that, some of the elements that they worked back then, because Baywatch was obviously, you know, there was a side, there were some episodes that, let's face it, they were pretty campy. We had an electric eel in a cave, we had an alligator in a storm drain, and, you know, various things like that. And we would just be like, really, man, this is what we're doing. But and surprisingly, the alligator in the storm drain episode had like one of the highest ratings, which is crazy. But I think they were smart. They recognized like that stuff, you can't pull that off on a network show. That was when Baywatch was syndicated. It was which meant it aired on different networks around the country and around the world. I think going forward, they've added some things that are going to make the show better. In a sense, because they're keeping the DNA, the heart and soul of what Baywatch was, excuse me, that's completely intact going forward. And then for my character, my character in the new show owns a bar. It's called like the Shoreline, and it's a place where all the lifeguards go after work and hang out. And the one element we really didn't have in the original show is like, you're on duty. You're not supposed to be really showing any of your personal life or problems. And the only place we really had was like, I think Pam and Yasmin had an apartment. I think I had an apartment of like an interior set, meaning, you know what I mean? And Hasselhoff had an interior set that won't all of the series, but we had no place to like congregate at night, like the lifeguards. And this, having Cody, who's the owner of the bar, and I'm still a lifeguard, be like, you know, have a place for them to go where you can actually see the real side of these people. Like, they don't have to hide, they don't have to pretend they're like they're, you know, super lifeguard. They can come with all their baggage, they can come with it, you know, it could be anything. So having that element, I think, is really gonna allow this show to have like, you know, a depth of character that we had, but it was just harder to get to because we were pretty much on duty or being lifeguards all the time. And so that part I think is fantastic. They've been they're all super, how do I say it? They're very enthusiastic. Fox is amazing. Everything I've seen so far out of Fox. Fremantle, obviously, is the company that owns it and has already established rights and territories around the world. And one of the main reasons the show is coming back is because, you know, they've sold the show around the world, and it's they've seen a steady uptick in the last few 3, 4 years where people are just watching the original series in its entirety again in some of these foreign countries. Like, so they obviously get all the what is the word?
Analytics.
Something like that. They study all that, and they just like, we have to pull the trigger. And so everybody, it just kind of came together. It seemed like it would never come together. I heard rumors, and I know one of the original producers, Greg Bonan, and my daughter's she's a junior lifeguard at Zuma Beach, and he's one of the instructors there. So I see him every morning in the summer and every afternoon. I'd be like, man, when is this thing happening? And then it was happening, and then there were rumors that they weren't going to bring back any original cast members, and I was like, no, don't, please, don't. You know what I mean? Just anyway, it was just I you know, a fair amount of hustling on my part. I had a lot of good people advocating for me, and when it came time, one of the decision makers, when they came up with the idea of an original, a legacy character coming back, who he or she owns the bar and can also still lifeguard, who's fit, everything. And this one person said the list was one person long, and you can figure out the rest, David. So, you know, it was pretty cool. It was a great honor to even hear that.
Now, how exciting is that as an actor? You know, because, you know, you think about actors, and you've had a very long career, and actors always have long careers. And, you know, you do remember once getting a while, like a Law and Order SVU, where, you know, Marissa Hargitay has seen that character grow over 20 years. But you now, you're coming back playing the same character that you played back in the original. And of course, that character grew. So do you work with the writers to decide which way he goes, or do they just write that? Because you're still a lifeguard, but you're not the young. I mean, I used to hang out with lifeguards in Stone Harbor, and, you know, we were all 21, 22, and, you know, you're chasing the wave, and that's what they did. But
Of course.
did you sit down and talk with the writers, or did they just sit there and decide which way your character is going to go?
Luckily, after I got the offer, they asked if I'd take a meeting, and it was with the showrunner, Matt Nicks, and all the, like, 10 writers. I was like, wow, it was supposed to be, I thought it was just lunch with them. And I walk in, it's in the writer's room. It was incredible. They had already predetermined my character's trajectory to a certain extent. And the fact that Cody is a mentor to the younger lifeguards, Stephen Amell, who's been cast to play the new version of Hope, the older version of Hobie, he's had some things happen, and it's like in his life leading up to where we kick off, and then in comes this daughter, a 21-year-old girl that he never knew he had, and he doesn't. He's like, you know, he's floored. He's everything is like the rug is pulled out from under him, and I get to, you know, kind of be this voice of reason with him. I get to kind of, you know, kind of talk him off the ledge and kind of help him through this. You know, it's a strange thing to happen for someone. You know, it's like, wow, what did I miss? Who are you? All these things are going through his head. And then also when these younger lifeguards, you know, when they're pulling stuff that they shouldn't be doing, you know, I'm kind of right up their butt, like, hey, I'm just telling you what you're doing right now is not gonna fly. You know, so I get to be that kind of this, you know, they wrote it really smartly. I'm kind of not an authoritative, more like a friend with strong suggestions on how to live a proper life, how to represent lifeguards in a really good positive light in terms of your actions on duty and off duty. So I didn't have to I didn't even have to even that was their idea, which I thought was genius. The one thing I am pushing for, though, is you know, my favorite part of Baywatch was doing the rescues and being in the ocean. So I think I've gotten the point across because, you know, I actually when I was still lobbying, I didn't have the offer yet. I cut together a 2-minute reel of like a highlight reel of all the things I can do in the ocean, basically, and also my fitness level is believe it or not, at the age of 58, I'm in better shape than I was when I was 24, because I just live a much more very disciplined life, and I just have like incredible work ethic, and I just go after it like a maniac. I mean, especially now, like I've throttled it way up. But I hope they, you know, because like I grew up, I was lucky enough. I grew up on the ocean. I knew how to drive boats. I know how to drive boats, wave runners. I taught sailing. I went to the Junior Olympics and windsurf racing. We were always, you know, water skiing. And so having the ability, even when I got to the original show, when I showed up and I was on a swim, I'd come from a swim team background. I knew how to drive wave runners like to perfection. I knew how to drive boats that like as good as any stunt guy could drive a boat. And I was already a certified scuba diver. They were like, oh my God, man, we can do anything with you. So they would write, you know, elaborate, once they knew I had these skills and they were real, they would write elaborate rescues. And it would be for Mike Newman, who's since passed away, but he was the only other one who could really pull off all the, you know, driving out of watercrafts and everything. And I'm not sure if they understand how hard it is. And these actors aren't going to have time to do much training because they're still casting, I think, one female. They're kind of struggling on, you know, it's a lot of different people that say yes. So I think I'm just hoping when it comes time to when they see the actors attempting to drive boats like by themselves, which there'll always be someone hiding in the boat. They won't let them. But when, you know, a lot of times my strength was, you know, we'd have the cameras in the water on sticks and we'd be pointing them out towards the, so it looked like open ocean, and they'd want you to come flying in on the wave runner, spin it and stall it, and then deliver lines over your shoulder to someone who was like supposedly off camera and then blast out. And I could do that 10 out of 10 times without even, you know, coming this close to the crew. And other actors would be crashing into rocks and they're just like, okay, they're not doing that anymore. So that's my hope, is that my character evolves. I'm just, you know, I'm super excited to be a part of this thing. It's a dream come true. And I think, I don't know, I got to do the research, but I'm wondering if anybody has gone back and played the same character 27 years later in not a reboot, I guess a continuation. Do you think?
I don't think so. You know, I'm trying to think, you know, I'm going to give that thought. And if I find out, I'll send you an email, but I got to ask you something right now. You said you made a two minute, I guess, a sizzle reel of stuff you can do on the water. So what were some of the things you sent? Because that would be very interesting. Like they put it in and they're probably like, what's David sending us? And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I mean, what was on that tape?
It was like just the most pumping up music you could ever. It was like a highlight reel, like for an athlete, basically. It was a combination of me surfing, driving wave runners recently, doing all these different, I do a lot of different things for fitness, like wacky stuff. So I combined all these stuff, plus a little bit of footage from the original show, but mostly where I'm at now and the fitness level I have now, and then just put it to this banging music. And it made it into the writer's room, and they all saw it. And I got a message from one writer that I know, okay. Like I don't know him great, but I know him. I saw him at this charity event, and he messaged me. He's like, "Man, your highlight reel." That he told me, "Don't send it too." And then one of the original producers was like, "David, send it to me right away, please." And then he got it in there somehow. So, and they all loved it. So it was kind of proof of concept, you know. You know, being an actor nowadays, it's like, I think any job in this world, if something you really want, you really believe in, I do not sit back. I don't wait for other people to, my manager or agent. If I left it to them, this thing would never be happening. You know, I was very careful. I like pushed and I pushed and I pushed and then I pulled back and I disappeared. And they couldn't even get a hold of me for a little while. They're like, I think they're like, where is he? What happened? but it was just the right amount. But it was a good reel. It's a really good lesson in life for anybody. You know, like if there's something you believe in and you feel in your heart and your soul, like you have to go after it and you have to be. You can't rely on anyone else, your mother, your father, your brother, your anybody, because nobody's going to push as hard as you are if you really want something.
Now, what I'm thinking, though, which something is might be eye-opening to you, you know, the show's going to get a big crowd because it all had viewers, and people are going to watch it. But now when you think about it, when, as you said, it was watched all around the world, at that time, there was no social media. So you're going to have to get ready for, it's going to be a whole new burst. Because what happens is, I talk to a lot of rock bands, a lot of musicians who say when they do shows, you know, the as like the grandmother, the mother, and the kid. So now you're going to have, you know, someone who watched it when they were, let's say, 11 or 12. So they're 30, something, whatever, 30 now, 35. And they have a kid and their parents. So have you been prepared? Because your social media will probably at least quadruple. Because as we said, back then, if you guys had social media, you all would have had over a million followers. So are you prepared for that onslaught? And luckily for you, as you said, you're in better shape now, because social media can be mean, so they can't say, oh, man, what happened to Djokovic? Man, oh, my God, he got... See, now you're still in shape. So are you ready for that? Because I think as an actor, because you knew what it was like, you probably got... Did you get a lot of fan mail back then? I mean, how did fans get in touch with you back when you were on it?
They would handwrite. We would go into the production office, because that's where our stage was, and there would just be boxes and boxes of handwritten letters. And that was fan mail, or they'd go to your publicist and you get stacks of fan mail. But I always wondered that, if like we had social media back then, how the show would have been, if it would have been different. You know what? The reason I am ready for it is because one of my biggest passions and purposes in life is advocating for dogs and saving dogs, and the work I get to do with Wings of Rescue. So I'm like, bring it on. I hope my followers quadruple and I get to spread the word about Wings of Rescue and the work we do and the importance of spay neuter and all these other things I kind of push for, because it allows me to have a bigger voice. I also work with like the Surfrider Foundation, you know, I've been a kind of ambassador for them ever since Baywatch. I met them on my first episode was based around Surfrider and water quality. And ever since then, I've been like directly in touch with them, and I got honored to receive one of their great, like really prestigious awards. They only give out every 4 years, the Keeper of the Coast. So, you know, I've always been one who used any, even if I have whatever, however many followers, I try and use it to, once in a while, yeah, of course I'll put some fun stuff on there, but most of the time it's either work related or it's me advocating for dogs or animals or the planet, you know? So, That's the, I guess, the upside of what hopefully is to come.
Now, you said, you know, you grew up near the water and you're doing all this stuff. And I read on, I guess you were a lacrosse and football player in high school?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and wrestle.
Okay, so you're this athlete. Then you go away to college and you know, you can never trust Wikipedia, but it said you were a poli-sci major.
True.
So at what point do you decide to become an actor? Because, you know, I've talked to actors who say, we became actors. Well, one, they always took drama class and they met, you know, good looking girls. Well, you know, you're a handsome guy. You're in great shape. I mean, so what made you decide to get into acting?
I think, you know, I had a passion for it, but I was born and raised in Plymouth, Massachusetts, which is a small New England town. And like the majority of people don't leave Plymouth, Massachusetts. My like buddies I played football, like Pop Warner football with and stuff, like they're still there. And I think one of the biggest things was like that's kind of started this. I went on a program called Semester at Sea in college. I went to Bates College in Maine, and Semester at Sea is it's a ship basically of 450 students, and we go around the world basically. Not entire, you don't circumnavigate, but we left from the Bahamas. We went all across the Atlantic, and you focus on third world countries. And so when you're at sea, you have class, and then as soon as you get to shore, you're free to go roam with your buddies and go crazy. And I went with a guy who I kind of knew from Bates, but a guy who's a year older. He's like, man, you have to go on this thing. The ratio of girls to guys is 3-1. The majority of the girls are from USC and Arizona State and Boulder. And I was like, dude, don't have to tell me anything else, because we're going to college in Maine, bro. And it's rough. I came back from that because we had been to Yugoslavia with a former Russia. We went up to the boat landed in Odessa, and we flew to Moscow. We we stop on in the Suez Canal, and they let us off. And we actually, back then, you could bribe the guards and climb up one of the pyramids. And, you know, then went to India, Japan, India, Malaysia, China, Japan, and then ended in Taiwan. And when I got back from that trip, I was like, that was the most, like, my mind was blown. Like, just seeing the things I saw. And one thing I was scared to death of would be locked into an office job. I had the worst fear that, like, you know, like, I don't know, that thing just cracked me wide open. And I did, we used to be Miami Vice fans. And when my parents would leave for the day, for the weekend or something, my sister had like a Camaro, and we'd make these home movies, and they were not bad. Unfortunately, my mom and sister taped over our movie with, like, watching us, like, one of their soaps. I'm like, are you kidding me? That was like our one copy. But, you know, I had the passion for it. And I kind of, after college, I worked for Congressman down in D.C., but it was more to, he was from Massachusetts, and he was, his name is Gary Studs. He was chairman of a subcommittee on wildlife and fisheries. And I was thinking about doing something in the environment, but I just wasn't certain, man. That's the problem with liberal arts school. You get a great education, but, you know, I wanted to be exactly the job I got, because I wanted to live a life. I wanted to be a fireman. I wanted to be a Delta Force guy. I wanted to be a homicide cop. And as an actor, I pretty much played every aspect of life, every profession almost that I wanted to do in one lifetime. So I just pursued it, and it started with modeling that led to commercials, and then I studied, and then I quickly realized, and I got a couple of national commercials in Boston really quickly. They were like, you should really study, because nobody gets a national commercial at their first like at that. And eventually I had been out to LA for a lacrosse trip, and I just wanted to live here too for a minute of my life. And so I convinced my parents, you know, I'm going to drive out there. I'd set myself up like ahead of time. I bailed my modeling stuff to this small agency. It was called Hero, and they had modeling and a commercial and a small theatrical division. But I happened to arrive on the Saturday afternoon before the Northridge earthquake kicked off on Monday at like 3:20 in the morning. So, and I was living in my buddy's brother's, he had a place on Larrabee Street, right above the Viper Room, and saw, you know, and off Sunset Boulevard, and that was a mind-bending experience. But luckily, I was a sailing instructor. My brother-in-law owned a construction company, and I worked for him for a long time. I really wanted to learn a trade, and that thing has paid off. I had fixed up so many of our homes. I help people all the time, build stuff, fix stuff. I can fix almost anything except like electrical and plumbing I can do. So, well, after the earthquakes, the entire entertainment business was shut down. But a friend of mine was working for FEMA and knew I had a construction background. He reached out and said, hey, man, do you want to make like, I think it was like $100 a house. He handed me, I had an iPad. I'd go to Northridge. I'd tell him who I am. All I do is inspect your chimney and check on the iPad whether the chimney is structurally sound, semi-sound, or demolished, basically. And there's like three choices. And you just knock out like 10 a day. And I did that for at least 4 months. And then the business picked back up. And I ended up getting a job. I moved into an apartment building. And as I was walking in, I see this guy renovating the place, and Brent, this is on the edge of Brentwood, right near the VA. And Brentwood's an awesome town, but there's right at the edge, there are these apartments that were really cheap and a little bit seedy. This guy was renovating, and as I'm carrying my bags up, I'm like, hey man, if you ever need someone who can swing a hammer really well, let me know. And he's like, yeah, whatever, dude. And next thing, 7 a.m, next day, knocks on my door. He's like, you want to go to work? I was like, yep. So I started working for him. I was studying at night, about 9 months after that, I got the audition for Baywatch, and worked out with my acting coach, who's this guy, Vincent Chase, who was a legend, and went through the whole process. And I, you know, it was funny because that, I tell this story to this day, because there's the three series I've gotten, Baywatch, Witchblade, and even Beyond the Break, which was a teenage surf drama not a lot of people saw, but it was, especially Witchblade and Baywatch, I I walk in the room. They had seen 1,000 guys. And I'm replacing David Charvet, who was the young heartthrob. It was a big role. Like, this is the future. This is like the second Baywatch hadn't peaked yet. It was still like ascending in terms of popularity when I came in. I walk in, the two casting directors, these women, they were so beat down and their heads are down. They're like this. And I'm like, oh God. And they look up and they're like, and their eyes explode and they're like, holy shit, you're the guy. You're the guy we've been looking for. Because the Doug Schwartz, one of the creators and executive producers, his wife wrote this character, Cody Madison, a guy from Indiana, Midwest, kind of blondish brown hair. But I embodied everything kind of physically and then spiritually or kind of whatever you call it. I just embodied exactly who she was like. And she was upset the mold of what she wrote. And when I walked in, they were like, you're the guy. You're the guy we've been looking for. Please tell us you can act. And I was like, nope. But I went on, you know, 5 more auditions and this passed to take a swim test. And then I crushed that and got the job. And, you know, once again, most people think, you know, when you get a serious regular job, I don't know if they, it was weird. They're like, you got it. I'm like, awesome. Oh my God. And they're like, but they're only guaranteeing you 7 out of 22. And, with the option to do 22 out of 22 if they like you, but if you're not very good, you know, they could drop you. So I'm like, okay, this is all right. So like the pressure was on, and luckily I the first day I remember I was like, wow, man, I was so nervous. And I watched the first scene I did, like, I can't even watch it. It's so bad. Because I remember how I was just like, and I was prepared. I worked a ton with a private coach. And but you're stepping onto it. It's like stepping into, say, stepping on the field with New England Patriots, Tom Brady at the height of his game, and they put you in the place as a starter. It's like, you know, I'm like, you know, it's a well-oiled machine. Here comes the new guy. All the eyeballs are on me. But luckily, after like maybe an hour of feeling like, oh my God, I'm in over my head, like I figured it out. I loosened up and just got into it. And then I just saw really quickly. I was, you know, I grew up with parents who instilled really hard work, great work ethic, and myself and my siblings. And so the fact that I was in super good shape, they worked out, everybody, the writers, the execs responded to immediately. The fans responded. So I realized that the more in shape I am, obviously physically and visually for them, the more they're going to write for me. If I keep working with my acting coach, my work is just going to get better. So I'd go to the set, Santa Monica, would shoot all day. I'd go work out and I'd go meet with my coach. And I just did that every day for months. And it paid off. I ended up doing 19 out of 22 my first season. So now, it was cool.
Now, what is that like though? Cause your life changes. As you said, you know, you were there, as you said, it was ascending, but then it just blows up and you're part of that. And it's like,
yeah.
You know, you're sitting there, you're a guy who's still new to acting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now you're training, which is good, which a lot of times people will just sit there and go, oh, I got a part, screw it, I'm not going to take class, but you need to take class. But what is it like for you? Because now you're probably getting recognized a lot, and because you're just play the stud on, you know, the show, women are probably going crazy. Like, what was it like when the show starts? What is it like when you would go out? Like, as people, the first season, people probably recognize you. But then as your character's becoming more popular, what is it like for you? Because I know people who've, you know, worked with the cat, been guest stars on Friends when they had blown up. And he said at that time, he said they were like talking like this because they didn't want people reading what they were saying, like lip reading, because everyone wanted to know what was going on. What was it like for you? Because as we said, the show blows up. I mean, and the fans are fanatical. It's great looking guys, beautiful women, the beach, you know, sharks, whatever, the electric eels and alligators in caves or whatever, and boxes.
Yeah.
But what was it like for you? I mean, how do you handle that as someone young? I know, true, you had good parenting. So they probably said, stay humble. But what was it like when you first started getting, do you remember the first time you got recognized out in public?
You know, the first time where it was like I realized how big it was, mostly internationally, because everybody in the U.S. at the time loved to say, "Oh, I don't watch Baywatch," watch, even, you know, even though they're at home watching it nonstop. Like, it was a thing. Like, they, it was like, but then to this day, now people are finally like, "Oh no, I watched the show. I just said I used to not watch it." Like, it was a weird. But as soon as we went outside the United States, like, we genuinely no one was cast at the same time, and we did a press trip to the UK, went to England and Scotland, and that was the first time where I saw the popularity of the show. And it was like, I mean, probably not with the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles were, that was a different level, but I mean, it was like people were just going ballistic for us, and we were just like, what is, like, we didn't even, I don't even know. No, we had already started shooting by then. But we were set up, we were doing all these shows in London, and then we were going to Scotland to this big Haggis Fest, this big dinner, and kind of seeing the country and doing a bunch of press there. I mean, it was incredible. I never, you know, I didn't, luckily I came from where I came, because I saw the pitfalls almost immediately when I got on that show. Like actors with egos, actors buying cars, actors buying houses, like, I saw how just, you know, and then leaving the show prematurely because they thought they were going to be movie stars, and find out, like, so doesn't everybody in LA wants to be a movie star, and get in line, dude, because you came up Baywatch doesn't mean anything. So I always remained true to the show. I never, not once, talked bad about it when I was on it or when I left. And that was one of the reasons they even brought me back. I somehow that came up in that meeting with Matt Nix and all the writers, like, how I always have talked positive, because I truly believe at my core, like, it was an awesome show. Yeah, there were moments that were whatever, like, a little tough, so like this, the electric eel thing, but for the most part, we're representing lifeguards, and I took that seriously. I trained with Mike Lumen for 2 months, and because my character was an Olympic swimmer, I was in the master's program with Greg Bronan, who's one of the other original creators, who's a big swimmer, and he's 72 and he's still an active lifeguard. And, so I was swimming with him, and I was training with Numi like every day for 2 months leading up to shooting. And I just took it super seriously, and because I knew LA County lifeguards were watching, and the minute you do something wrong in a rescue, they're going to be so far up you, like, you just don't even know which way your head's spinning. And I refuse to be that guy who's going to be called out for not doing anything procedurally to kind of technically correct. And you know, my athleticism helped, all of that helped me be like just kind of the character they really hoped for. But I didn't buy into the whole, I mean, sure, I had a lot of fun, trust me. We had fun, like, going to, you know, I mean, there would be clubs or bars. That was like when Sunset Boulevard was fully alive and like pumping. And like, I think it was the Sky Bar we used to go to. But, you know, before I got on the show, it'd be like, nah, get in line and wait, or don't even, you're not coming in here. And then I got on the show and it was like, come on up, David, who's with you? Okay, yeah, you're all coming in. Like, those are the perks for sure. And yeah, the females were, we'd come out of the woodwork, and that was not a bad thing either. But in terms of like ego or it going to my head, and even my buddies I played football with, because I played at Bates College, I played strong safety, and we were a tight unit. We were a terrible team, but our defense was super good. And we all lived in the same house. There's 28 football players, there's 4 baseball players, and of various ages. And they all thought once I got this show, they're like, oh, we're kind of whispering behind my back, Chokichi's going to change. He's going to become this guy like Hollywood, whatever, you know. And then I saw them soon after we finished shooting our first season, and I was exactly the same person. And they were like, oh my God, dude, you haven't changed at all. You're the same like idiot you were at Bates with us, and in a good way, you know what I mean? So, and I've stayed that way. I don't think that there's been one period. I just don't, maybe there's 10 actors who could take themselves that seriously and say, you know, what they are doing is really important. But in general, what we're not, I say we're not saving lives, we actually saved lives. Baywatch did, because, so there's a caveat to that, because so internationally, we would get letters from families. They didn't even understand. There would be like a 9-year-old boy who pulled his younger 7-year-old brother out of a pool, but because he had watched Baywatch, like the kid had drowned, he had watched Baywatch, he knew the rudimentary, like, chest compressions and blowing air into their mouth. And we, I don't know how many stories, and these were handwritten from the parents, like, to, like, the, and the executives would bring us in at certain times and be like, look at this, and you're reading it, and you're like, oh my God, we are actually saving lives. Like, I mean, so it was like such a, anytime anybody made fun of the show, I would bring that up, you know, be like, yeah, well, you want a show that's actually portraying something in a real, like we're portraying lifeguards, which I see because my daughter's in this junior lifeguard program. I see them every day. It's an awesome, healthy, amazing profession, you know, and I wanted to portray that to the highest of my ability. And so we actually were, but in terms of actors taking themselves so seriously, man, it's such a pitfall because, you know, I mean, you're lucky to have a job. It's such a brutal world to, like, to stay employed, and to have that attitude of you're better than anyone else is, I had no space for it in my life. When I saw it, I would either disengage or I'd even say something. I'd be like, dude, you're not that important. Be nice to that person, you know? Like, I don't feel ever, and I've been doing it for 30 years working, I don't feel I'm better than not one person, not one good person on the planet, you know what I mean? You can skip all the bad people, but I just, I treat everybody, if they're doing good things in life, and respectful, and I treat everybody on the same level, and give them, always try and give them a smile, try and bring someone up, try and help others, and you know, just, I try and make the world a better place now. Honestly, that's my mission.
So, you're on Baywatch. Why do you leave?
I had a five-year deal. I had finished my fourth year, and they were in limbo. They were either going to Australia or Hawaii, and they weren't set yet. They didn't know. They didn't have a home. So, this was back when there was a pilot season, and so my manager was like, you know, you should go for pilots and just test it, see what's going on. Like, yeah. So we asked the producers, and at the time, they felt I wanted out. And their reaction, this one guy, they just said, you know, we don't want any unhappy actors. They always thought the show, and now I'm going to go work with some of them, all of them again. So I don't know if I should even say this, but they just felt certain cast members were expendable, and the show was bigger than any of the actors except Pamela and Hasselhoff, which all of us, and there's a big cat, I think it's like 60, maybe, I don't know how many series regulars were on the show besides those two, who really made the show what it is. You know, to say that, I always felt like, you know, he just like, we don't want anybody unhappy where he can be out of his contract. But he kind of like, he didn't really give me the option. He's like, he was more like, he was so mad that he kind of was like, let me go. And I was like, and it turned out to be a blessing because the show went to Hawaii, although they had a blast, it did not work. It didn't translate. And I went on, I got a pilot with Jon Favreau directing. It was one of the smartest things. If it was happening today, it'd probably be, it was called Smog. It was about life in LA and relationships. And like Noah Emmerich was in it. A buddy of mine, one of my roommates, Ken Marino, who's done a bunch of stuff, he was in it. It was a great cast. And we were at UPN, which was not the right network for it, and it didn't get picked up. But that led to me getting the audition for Witchblade, which was probably one of the best shows I've ever done in terms of writing. And once again, if you look at the comic book, I look up my character, Jake McCarty. I mean, when my hair was like blonde, I looked just like Jake McCarty. But that one I had to audition for and fight for. And it came down to a screen or a test for, that was back when they'd put you in front of all the executives from Warner Brothers and everybody. So you go into this theater and it's packed, and it's like, it was me and one other guy who was actually, the other actor was more famous, had more credits than me, but he was such a prick. We're in the waiting room. Like, this is your final moment, like make or break. You get the role, he gets the role. So, and they're only testing a few people, like only us for that role. There's down to two of us. And he was so cocky, man. He was dressed in like a tweed outfit, I remember. And he was journaling. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, I think I said something, man, aren't you like, going to work on your thing? Or aren't you stressed a little bit? He's like, no, man, I got this. Come to find out, he goes in, he actually blows it. Like he's blubbering through his lines because I've since became really good friends with the showrunner, Ralph Emeker. And he told me the real story afterwards. And they bring me in, I go out of the room. He calls me back, he gives me notes, he gives me 5 minutes to integrate the notes. I go back in, do the scene with his notes, boom, I get the job. And this other guy, this other actor who was just, oh my God, man, if you could have seen this scene, like the setup, because I mean, there's me, I'm like running my stuff, I'm doing breathing techniques, I'm trying to meditate, I'm trying to do everything to get in the zone. And this kid's like over there thinking he's gonna own this thing. And he goes in and like literally he blew up in front of all these executives and start mumbling and stumbling, and I go in and drilled it and got the role, and that was an awesome show. Karma.
What made the show in your eyes? What made it so awesome? You said it was one of your best shows. What made it so, the writing, the acting, what made it so important to you?
The writing was phenomenal. I mean, it was based on a hit comic book that's still around. It's still, I guess, a famous comic book right now. But the creation, the whole show itself, like if you, I'm surprised they did. CBS, I think, was going to try and reboot it or something. They never did. It was light years ahead of everything else that was in terms of the way it was shot, the things we were doing, the soundtrack we had. But the writing and the character development, my guy looks like he's a rookie in the first few episodes. And then you come to find out at the end of the, we only did 2 seasons because of some issues with someone. But it turns out like I was a Fed and I was an undercover Fed the whole time. And the way they arced it out, it was just beautiful. And when as an actor, if I'm working on a, if I read a script or I read a, I have a scene to shoot and I read it and it just, I read it once, read it twice, and it's like, it goes right in my head. I think I know it after just reading it. That's not even like working on it, like breaking it down, but I've absorbed it. That's when I can tell like the writing is just spot on. But when I get a script and I'm struggling, like, and I throw out all I got, like now I've abandoned my technique. I'm just trying to memorize the friggin' lines because it's like, I can't even. And I'm still struggling. That's when I know the writing's really bad because it's just there's something wrong. There's some sort of disconnect in the writing, and it's not like organic to how humans speak. There's something off, and sure enough, that's usually not a great project. But I always try. I bring everything I got to every project that I do because I love it. I love the craft. I do movies of all kinds because I want to. The only time it's like surfing, for example. Like you cannot get better paddling, you can't get better watching surf videos or going to surf class. The only way you get better is when you're on the wave. That's the only time, because that's when you're learning like you're how you're to place your weight and everything. And for acting, the only way I feel you get better is when you're in front of the camera, because that's when the pressure is on and there's people, there's lights, everybody's like, it's all on you. It's your close-up, let's see what you got. And so I always am like, unless it's something that's horrible, I like working it. I love the process, and I've done like 12 movies in the last 15 months, and all kinds of like various things, and it's just such a fun experience. I'm just at a point in my life where I enjoy the process more than I think I ever did. I feel like I don't know. I when I get to set, I own my space, and I'm not in an ego way, but like I'm confident in my abilities, and I'm confident when I get in front of camera. Like I know I can deliver, and if you want something else, I can give you something else. I have like the range I have as a going from one emotion to the next. I can do it in like the drop of a hat. I think it's just like life experiences have led me to a place of where I just really believe in myself.
Well, then you do constantly work. You said you're doing so many movies, but I want to ask you, Witchblade you liked so much. What was it like when you found out it wasn't coming back? What is it like when you have this great role and you said the writing's great and you think it's great, and then you find out, I mean, you've done well, you've gone on and kept working, but what is it like
Yeah.
when you sit there and you go, man, and when you know it's beyond, well, I'm not going to get into it, but what you're saying, it seems like it was beyond your control.
Yeah.
So what is that like for you? What did you mentally go through? Did you sit there and say, okay, did you deal with some depression? because it would, I'd be like, oh man, this is bullshit. I'm used to getting up, going to this great show, and now it's done. How did you rebound, and what did you go through when that happened?
Yeah, when that happened, I definitely went through all cycles, because that show would have run for 10 years, I bet. I guarantee, like, it was a hit. It was a hit. It was when TNT was just getting into series television, and Warner Brothers was so behind it. They were behind it 1,000%. Just having Ralph Hemeker involved, like, this guy he still is a genius, but this thing, he just had a magical way. He was the first guy to ever, you know, the flyover of a city that they did, like, everybody's ripped him off ever since. He was the first one to do that in television, where there's an aerial view over, like, supposed to be New York City, and that's, like, in the opening credits. He did stuff where he messed with, like, the frame rate a lot. He would give, like, a weird depth of field, like, all kinds of cool things. And, yeah, that one should have, and it wasn't the show. It was just an individual was having some problems, and TNT, Warner Brothers wanted to continue with someone else, and TNT was just fed up because they'd been, this happened, a few things had happened throughout the progression of the two seasons, and they just kind of were like, no, we're out, which was like, man, first of all, I was making incredible money, because that's back when when the business honored we used to have a quote, you know, it's kind of like, you've done this, your quote would build, the more credits you get, the better quality of projects. So my quote was legitimate. And if you got a new series, they honored that quote no matter what. They know what it is before they even bring you in. They'd be like, what's his quote? Okay. And they figure out if they can pay it. Because if I go in there and they fall in love, they're not going to negotiate below that. There's no way. But now that whole system is completely they've ruined that. These people have come in and taken over Hollywood. Like, that system's gone out the window. But it wasn't even just the money. It was the fact that we were in Toronto, and it was you know, and almost all projects, except there's some that I can't wait to get off of, but the majority of I have this weird, like, a real sadness when they end. Like, it's weird. Like, and Witchblade was just cut off way prematurely, and we, like, because we were all in location. I mean, I had a driver. This guy was the greatest guy in the world, and the stunt crew, everybody. Like, we would hang out on weekends because we had nowhere. We're not running home. And we just became this tight, like, traveling circus of, like, and I was really heartbroken because, it was so smart. It was so clever. And I could, like, where my character went in two seasons, like, it could have just gone, like, juggernaut for me creatively. And to be able to have that kind of writing, just, you know, the writing as an actor you dream of, that, like, handed to me. And, you know, we had guest stars like Roger Daltrey, we had to say, it was so well crafted. And just when you think, like, you know what's going to happen, like, they do something opposite that is completely like, you don't question it. When you see it in the final cut, you're like, oh my God, that worked. Like, he did some magical stuff at the end of season two. And I was like, this is not going to fly. It's not going to work. And I watched it, and I was like, it worked. I was like, he's a mad genius. I'm still really good friends with him. I just talked to him yesterday about this news. I sent him some press, and he was like, beyond, like, he knows how hard it is. You know, I mean, it's so hard to level up in this town, especially now. Like, everything shoots out of here. So, like, and also everything is self-taped. So actors from around the world are submitting their tapes for roles that used to be, you had to be here in person, you had to live here. And so the competition has become global for anything big. So now for a series lead on any network show you see, or any big streamer, it's considered, like, say it's me. Like, they're looking for someone, the best guy from Australia, from the UK, from France. All these best guys are all going in for that same role too. So it's become like a shark-eat-shark world. And so this happening for me, you know, like, jumping up and being on a network show like Fox, and having them so excited about bringing back a legacy character, but it's like, It's really surreal. It's beyond.
Now, you're not the first actor I've talked to that says Hollywood has changed so much. Is that one of the reasons why you've gotten into producing? Because I know you produce. Is that one of the reasons? Because it's easier to get something going that way? Because as I said, everyone says self-tape, they hate it because you've been in the business for a long time. You're used to going into the room. That's what you do.
Yeah.
And as you said, you're not the first who says, you know, guest star used to be great pay. Now it's like, oh, you come in for a day, you know, whatever, scale, you know, we'll keep you, you know. So is that why you got into producing?
Well, no, I mean, my real goal, I have one project that's really far along in development. And now I may actually have a really good shot of getting it made because of, it's so funny, man. All of a sudden when the press, because we did this big press junket, Stephen Amell and myself, he's playing Hobie in the new version, and Mick G, who's directing the first episode. But the press went crazy for the story of Cody coming back. It was like, I mean, I saved all of them in like my notes on my computer. And I mean, like, just they're really congratulating Fox and Fremantle and Matt Nix and their producer, all the executives, Mike Horowitz, all of them for actually having the vision to bring back the legacy character and keep those fans, you know, bring that whole fan base to the new show. It's awesome that they actually really got behind that and are supporting it. And hopefully, you know, I just plan on, like, I've done this on a couple movies. My role is, you know, I'm in the first episode, which I'm stoked about because Mick G is directing that one. And it kind of establishes, you know, they love the idea of the bar, and they're building the bar on the Fox lot, which means in theory, they're going to use it a lot. So it means I'll work a lot, but I want to just climb the ranks. And my plan is just to kind of quietly go in and steal the show, man. And, you know, just not steal it away from anyone, but just have my character get to a point where they go, wow, we need to write more for Cody. Like, he's not the 22-year-old Cody. He has a lifetime of experience. And when they see what I can do just as an actor now compared to what I was doing back then, I think they're going to be like, whoa, dude, where did you come from? Like, you're different. You're way. Life experience is good and bad. I've had a lot of good and a lot of not a lot, but I've had some bad, like some hard times with an injury that lasted. But I grew from all that stuff. And that go through for this one injury was 3 years of hell. And when I came out the other side, I had a depth of character then. I felt like I had a mini superpower when I came out. And I still feel like I do now. Like, it just feels like it's better every day. More ecstatic, enthusiastic about my life. Like, I'm out of bed at 3:30 or 4 every morning, and my wife's like, what are you doing? And it's people, we have like a sauna and an ice plunge, and I do that every day. I get stretched. I do all like the, I don't know, I do all the housework. I clean up the dog shit. Like, I get everything done so I can do other things or whatever, you know, try and work out, you know, you name it. It's really, the timing is surreal. I honestly feel, in a way, like the way this has happened, I don't know how much you believe in fate or like the universe, but almost that all things I've done in my career have led to this moment, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, it does. And a lot of people say that, you know, and that happens all the time. And it is true. A lot of things, you are where you are, you're supposed to be. And the thing is, but it's because it is fate, but it's also because you've stayed passionate and you've stayed focus. And I think, like anything, you know, I know actors like, you know, Spencer Garrett and Patrick Fabian, they say, you know, when they came to town, there was thousands of actors. And then as they got older, they started, and now they're still there. You know, there may only be 20 of them, but when they sit there, and now it's not competition. When someone gets a job, they go, that person was right for the job. But they said because they stayed there and they kept a good attitude. And I think that's what's happening with you. Now, I got to ask you one final question, David, because I always ask this to my guests. And I'm going to ask you that, but then before we go, I want you to tell me about the Wings of Wrestling.
Wings of Wrestling.
Yep. But looking back at your career and your life, and this can be professional and personal, it could be both. When you look back, what are you proud of? You know, I mean, you can sit there and say, you've had a hit show. You know this. You know you've been on People's Most Beautiful whatever 1999. You're right.
That was a big deal.
I know that's huge. But now, what makes you proud? What are you proud of in your life? You know, professional and personal.
Number one is my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter. She's like the most important thing in the world to me. Here's a picture of her when she was little. She would kill me if I showed you this. This is her junior lifeguard.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she's like a knockout. I'm like, oh God, man. Like, but I'm most proud of her. You know, I raised her for a big portion because my wife had a high level corporate executive job with a fashion brand and was traveling a lot. So at first I was like, oh man, I can't leave town. This is brutal. But I quickly realized, we weren't gonna have some nanny raise our kid. Like my wife and I were not raised that way. And we loved her so much anyway. So I was like, you know, obviously it makes sense. You're killing in your field. My field is so unpredictable. I'll be the guy who stays and takes her to school. And she had to travel a ton back then. And so I spent a lot of time with her and got to really put my stamp on her and just, you know, I'm constantly building stuff for working out or hiking. And as a little kid, she would always want to go with me or help me build stuff, you know, and now it's a little different. Obviously she's 14. It's like, she doesn't want to do as much with me, but I think I started her surfing on the front of my board when she was 3 years old, got her life jacket with a grab, like a grab hold. And we surfed from her age 3, like on every summer. And actually, even not more than that, like pretty much year round, I had her in the ocean, and now she's killing it. Like, she's heading into junior lifeguards, where she's actually in a great bone in the dimension, who's a part, you know, they're part of this show, but they just don't have as much. The original show, they own, they have the say, they have the voice. Now they don't. She's entering his group this year, which we're all very excited about. But yeah, she's awesome, and definitely the proudest, the most thing I'm proud of personally. And then professionally, I think the fact that I'm, you know, I think that I was able to hang in there and make it over there. You know, I used to be really tied to the business emotionally in terms of trying to climb my career climbing and trying to get better projects. And when they didn't happen, I would really like, it would just mess me up a little bit. And I'd be the other guy you were talking about, the jealous guy of guys who got it. Now I'm rooting for my buddies as much, if not more, than me on almost anything. I'm because I had no help when I got here, really. I mean, I knew just one acting coach who was very small acting coach in the Valley. And that was like the only, and then my buddy's brother, whose country lived on, and that was it. And so everything I got, I earned myself. And now I try and help people who I believe are good people. And I try, and if I'm producing on a movie, I find them something in it so they can at least be on set and learn. But yeah, I think the fact that I got over that hump, and now I love my life so much. The work I do with Wings and Rescue is incredible. We have a community fire brigade out here that was really hard to get into. And there's a real need for it. We lost our rental house. We've been out in Point Doom, and we lost our rental house in the Woolsey fire. And then we had the Franklin fire, came really close. And then Palisades, obviously, was a nightmare. It was super close every day. And there's a group out here. They started this community brigade where you have to apply, and you go through 60 hours of training, and then it's ongoing training. But you become, and it's a part of LA County Fire Department. It's basically an extension. And I got into that. I applied, and luckily I know a sheriff out here who kind of vetted vouched for me. And so these, like, even without acting, although I love it, like, incredibly, like, if it all stopped, I'd still be very happy in my life. Although I'm a lot happier when I get to do everything I love. Like, I get to go do these projects. I get to go. I just got back from a Wings of Rescue trip. We did, Wings of Rescue flies dogs that are at risk out of overcrowded shelters, and they also fly dogs and cats out of active natural disasters. So when because when a disaster hits, they know, like, say the Palisades fire, when these things hit, obviously people are at work, like their dogs are either fleeing and they're gone, or there's all kinds of a number of reasons why there's going to be a huge amount of incoming animals. And the shelters that were already overflowing and animals are being euthanized daily because of the overcrowding, we're about to receive thousands upon thousands of dogs and cats because of the fires. So Wings of Rescue is a group that goes in and does large scale animal transportation out of here. And they do them with partnered shelters. So they're, any dog we fly, we're taking it from being at risk of being euthanized. It's going almost everywhere from DC to Maine, all in New York, Connecticut, Maryland, Pennsylvania. There's tons of space there. That's where we go almost all the time and drop dogs. And they want to adopt. They want to adopt a rescue. So, and they don't have the problem of overcrowding. So we're taking them out of danger and we're giving them a second chance at life, which is incredible. And I don't know if you can see my very proud rescue shirt. And I don't know if it's still on there, but they named me flight crew leader, which was cool. But it's volunteer. And it's like, you know, we did a flight on Friday night. We load the dogs at 11 at night. She was two planes, but on our plane, there was, I think, 200 dogs or 180 dogs, maybe 40 cats. And we take off at 2 in the morning. We fly to Gary, Indiana. We drop off half, fly to Delaware, drop off the rest of the dogs. As soon as we're done unloading, me and the other Wings of Rescue person are jamming to the commercial airport to try and connect, get on flights, go right on. I fly to Atlanta, get on another plane, fly Atlanta, LA. I mean, it was 25 hours. I looked at it from leaving Malibu, doing all that, flying all the way back. And by the time I got home, it was 25 hours. And you don't sleep much, but I love it. It's like, I love pushing all the limits that they say humans, you know, you gotta get 8 hours of sleep, but it's like, really, says who? Because I've heard lots of different things about that too recently. Like, because I sleep probably like 4 or 5 hours, but I heard this thing where if you only sleep that much, your body learns really quickly that, okay, he's only gonna give me 4 or maybe 5 hours. We have to drop into that deep restorative sleep immediately. Whereas most people, it's a long descent into a REM or a restorative. And I saw this study and I looked it up and it's real. And your body recognizes that you're only going to get this much. So somehow instinctually, like there's some physiological thing that kicks in and you go into that restorative state quicker. But the work I get to do with them, I have a deep, deep affinity for dogs. I grew up with them and I get to take them out during the flight. I usually take out some puppies that seem most like they're not really stressed, but I try and shoot some videos while we're there because there's nothing to do. There's no Wi-Fi. I'm on a steel floor of a shelled out plane. Like, and so I'll take out my camera and I'll hang it on something and I'll shoot videos that I'll hand to the rescue when I get there and be like, look at how cute these puppies are or whatever. Like I don't take out a bigger dog because it's too much of a risk, but the puppy, and they'll fall asleep in my arms, and I'll keep them warm or whatever. It's just like, it's such an awesome feeling, man. I fly home, and I'm like, it's also like I hear humans. Like there was a guy behind me once after I had just done one of these flights, no sleep, saved so many dogs, and it definitely like it's very emotional because I care deeply about these animals. And this guy behind me on the plane home back to LA is complaining about the temperature on the plane. And he almost made us do an emergency landing because he kept bringing it up with the stewardess. And I was this close, man, but I was like, I'm thinking I'm going to get arrested. Like just jumping over my chair and just throttling him. Because when you experience the tragedy of seeing dogs or knowing a dog's going to be euthanized that is completely healthy, or even the joy of saving these, it hits your soul deeply. And when you hear humans complaining about things like temperature on an airplane, like it was too cold for him, like my tolerance for that stuff is just, it's zero, man. So I put on my headphones and it's full blast the whole way. Cause I don't want to hear one human being say, you know, or they're talking about some TikTok video. So it gives me, you know, it's such incredible purpose in life. being able to do this with them. They're an amazing group, and they're donation only. And, you know, they pay for the plane, they pay for the fuel. They don't own a plane because it doesn't work out that well. And luckily they get some great donors or sponsors who come in. I don't know if you remember Juliana Rancic. She was on camera, I think, for E Television, one of those shows. She's become a huge supporter of this show. Actually, when we got to Gary, Indiana, it was, first of all, it was freezing on the plane. And then we landed, it was freezing. And she's out there standing there with her, like, nice jacket. She always looks really, like, she dressed well. But it was freezing. And she's out there, and she's, like, so cool. And just what a, such an awesome human being. She takes one of the dogs and it was kind of like messy, so she took it out of its crate and like took it for a walk, and then we changed crates and we helped clean it up, and I picked it up and back in. And she's just an awesome human. But it's you know, I think what, one of the greatest things I've learned, Steve, in my life experience is that when you're in service of others, whether it's a human, an animal, or the planet itself, like the stuff I do with Surf Rider, mostly humans or planet or animals, when you're in service to those living things and you do something, a selfless act of kindness, and you do it repetitively, like you're giving your time, it comes back to you like in like 20 fold times a thousand. Like I feel like so fulfilled at the end of these trips, and it carries forward, because it's like there, Wings at Rescue is like, when can you fly next, man? When can you fly next? And you know, I have to balance a lot of things, like family life and we have two dogs. One of our rescues is sleeping right behind me, but I love it. And I think when people are struggling in life, if you go do something, go help, like go to your, like, or they ask, like, what can I do? Like, you can go to your local shelter. I guarantee they're understaffed and they need someone to eat. If you're old enough, you can walk the dogs. You just fill out some paperwork, or you could just clean kennels, which I know sounds like, oh, I don't want to do that, but you should. You should be able to go clean a kennel, because like getting your hands in some shit is good for people. Like, you got to get dirty and you got to get out there and live life. And when you start, if you're in a bad place, I've learned, like, if you sit around and you think, you try to think it away, you're just going deeper. But if you take action, you go in a direction, and you try and help someone who's maybe struggling, or you hold the door open for someone at the grocery store, you make them smile. It fulfills you in ways you don't even know, man. I think that's the biggest thing I've learned through my, you know, my life. Oh, no. Okay, sorry. As you know, if you, being of service is a great thing for everyone. So yeah, I'll end with that one, man.
That's awesome, David. I want to thank you so much for coming on. So now, do you know when the new Baywatch will be coming out?
Supposedly in the fall, 26. So that's the goal, because Fox had, you know, NFL is huge on Fox. They don't want to miss that audience. We're supposedly starting shooting March 16th. So, I mean, I can't see why they can't turn this around. And, you know, if we're shooting, I don't know how many days per episode. I just finally got the email from the second AD, and I was like, I've been waiting for this thing. And I was like, yes, there it is. Like, your work days are this, and I have wardrobe fitting, and but yeah, it's going to be the fall, and I hope they don't push it, because I think they all are well aware, like, Fox has a huge audience on the NFL, and, you know, I mean, I don't watch much TV. I used to watch a lot more, but I'll watch the Super Bowl because I'll meet the Pats this year, but we're hoping to grab that audience, because they're going to advertise the heck out of this, because they really believe in it. And so far, like, everything I've seen from their end, and Fremantle owns it, everybody involved is just, they really have a great vision. They're super smart, super talented people. And they're not, like I said, they're not trying to reinvent the wheel. They're keeping all the heart and soul of Baywatch. I think it's just going to be polished, and it's going to be slicker, because cameras, now we have drones. Like, you know, when we're shooting rescues before, you have to have a guy like with us or trailing us on a jet ski with a camera, or like, now you can attach a camera to us. We can do all kinds of crazy shit and like get footage that they've never seen before in ocean rescue. So that stuff I'm really excited about. And the tank, I've seen my buddy got the job as Marine coordinator. He was on the original, Mike Brady. And he sent me a picture. There's a huge, like, it's the size of a football field and a half on the Fox lot. And they're renovating it just for Baywatch. And The one we had for the original show was like the size, kind of the size of my, our, I don't know, a small house, you know, just a blacked out tent around it, blacked out. So it's all black and they control, like, because anytime you go underwater, they need the clarity of the water to shoot underwater. So rescues are on the surface, on the ocean. And once you go below, you're in the tank. And like this tank looks like, you know, there's big, huge jets off the side to create waves. I'm like, oh man, like, I think the show is going to really like shock people in terms of production value and creatively the way they've cast it and the people behind it. I believe they're to take something that's a global sensation to try and do it again. I mean, most people would say not a chance in hell. With this group, I would say almost with absolute certainty, there's a very good chance this will be the number one show in the fall. And I think it'll go on for years.
So people, look for it, the new Baywatch, and look for Cody Madison, played by David. So people, check him out. Go to IMDb. Check out all his work. You can also go to my website, coopertalk.net. You can find 1,059 episodes there. You can email me at cooper@coopertalk.net. Also, if you're on YouTube, look up Lawsuits and Lessons. Myself and attorney John Fagerholm. Every other week, we talk to entrepreneurs from around the country. I get some of my friends from back here. He gets some of his friends from LA and Texas. It's really good. It's very informative. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at Cooper Talk, Threads at Cooper Talk 1, Instagram at Cooper Talk 1. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guest. Don't forget, drink your water, eat your vegetables, take your vitamins, and I'll talk to you next time.